Synversations, a podcast that explores the depths of synthetic biology from various multidisciplinary standpoints. I'm Tess Kane, and I'll be your host for today. I'm a third-year student here at the University of Toronto, studying physics and physical geography. Synversations is a five-episode-long podcast created by the University of Toronto Policy and Practices. iGEM is a student association dedicated to the practice of synthetic biology and the dissemination of its scientific foundations. For this episode, we will be examining the involvement of the arts community within science and specifically synthetic biology. Joining us today will be Ananda and Tracy.
Hey, my name is Tracy. I am a recent biology grad from U of T, and I am about to start my master's in biomedical communications, traditionally called medical illustrations, in September. I currently work as a freelance contractor developing scientific visuals. So the visuals I create come in all different shapes and sizes and flavors. Sometimes it's a traditional pen ink sketch, sometimes a static 3D model, sometimes a 3D movie, sometimes a short 2D animation. But the goals of these visuals are usually the same. So aside from being hopefully aesthetically pleasing, the goal of these visuals is to break down and communicate complicated scientific concepts.
My name is Ananda Gabo, and I'm an interdisciplinary designer. For those who might not know what this means, I'm a designer who likes to work with people and practices from various backgrounds to incorporate new tools and skills into an experimental practice, with, of course, all participants and bodies of knowledge credited. I'm working towards producing a series of installations that tell stories of hybrid food production methods. I'm mostly focusing on a speculative future in the intersections of industrial agriculture and permaculture, which are two really polarized food production practices. So right now I'm interviewing botanists, eating military meal rations, going to conferences, and reading papers.
Could you describe your involvement with both the synthetic biology and the arts community?
Regarding synthetic biology, before I moved to Toronto, I actually studied immunology and infections for 2 years at University of Alberta. So their immunology program is fairly genetics and microbiology heavy. So I have to say I have a pretty good molecular biology background. So also when you work with clients who are almost always involved in biological or medical research, it's pretty impossible to avoid synthetic biology. So for example, I just came back from working at a peripheral nerve regeneration lab in Edmonton. And at the nerve regeneration lab, the clinicians, mainly plastic surgeons, they're investigating a treatment for nerve injury called conditioning lesion. So what that is basically you purposefully injure a healthy nerve to speed up the recovery of an injured nerve. And aside from having to develop a lot of surgical technique, a lot of the research is actually dedicated to the molecular mechanism involved in nerve regeneration. So for example, how can we quantify the changes in mRNA level during nerve regeneration? Because, you know, new neurofilaments need to be made, new signaling proteins need to be made. And also, how do we control the expression of the genes that are involved in encoding those signaling molecules, like brain-derived neurofactor, GAP43, etc. So I think in essence, because all lives on Earth is a protein production process, and synthetic biology is essentially manipulating the blueprint of protein production. So if what you do is studying living things, you have to deal with synthetic biology at some point, for sure. And my involvement with the arts community, so I have to come clean. I actually never had any formal art training aside from a couple design and technical illustration class I took in undergrad out of interest. So when people introduce me sometimes as a graphic artist or designer, I feel like a huge imposter.
Okay, that's cool.
In the synthetic biology community, I'm seen as a bioenthusiast, as I like to promote the intersections of arts and sciences in any way I can.
And I'm still trying to figure out where I fit in, as I don't feel like I'm fulfilling my role as a good liaison on any side quite yet. But I see so much potential for both disciplines to work together to create things that go beyond agar plate painting. For those who might not know what this is, it's usually where you paint bacteria onto agar plates. Usually they're very scenic or decorative. I really like the concept of this activity, but the standards for making art these days have changed. I want to see more coming out of these intersections. Art is no longer about satisfying an aesthetic threshold with tools like paint and paintbrush. It must also inspire critical discussion. The most relevant and impactful work in contemporary art is being done through social commentary in performance, object-based storytelling, and digital artifacts. For example, it's become so commonplace that there are even awards for artists who work with blockchain technology. I try to give tools and starting points to students, artists, and designers who want to learn more about biology, who might not know where to start. I love seeing the empowerment that someone who has never been in a lab can summon. By suddenly showing someone in a creative field how to use a pipette, talking about tools in a lab space, and how to read protocols, you can give them the muscle memory and perhaps a set of tools and a language to spark new bodies of work.
Wow, you guys seem quite knowledgeable with both subjects, art and synthetic biology, despite claiming apparently that you're not good enough for both, but obviously that's a lie. All right, so what's the general impression you think biology gives the arts community?
Because again, I have to affirm that I am not a trained artist, so I don't think I can tell you how the arts community views biologists, because I mainly work with scientists. But as a wannabe creative in science, I do get the impression that artists and designers feel like they're constantly being undervalued. I personally think it's because as a profession, there is no real bar to enter the art and design industry, to the extent that there is even a very common belief that art education is unnecessary, which is, I don't think it's true. But in the world of science and research, we put so much emphasis on credentials, and there is this perception gap, I would say.
It depends on who you talk to. There are artists who are really intimidated by biology. We have been trained within our educational systems to believe that the practice of arts and sciences are separate. Secondary school curriculums are usually structured to separate students who can do quantitative research from those who think they can't. It's unfortunate because usually these problems arise due to a negative experience in maths or sciences, maybe because of a teacher. When interviewing students for my thesis on the aesthetics of labs and how to involve more creatives in the sciences, I would often hear accounts of, I love biology, but there was this teacher, or I couldn't keep up, or I chose art. But it really doesn't have to be like this. I have met artists and biologists who have found harmony in between both bodies of knowledge, and it's inspiring. But it doesn't have to be like this. I have met artists and biologists who have found harmony in between both bodies of knowledge. It's inspiring, and you really see great work coming out of it. The attitudes towards the contemporary practice of biology and art has also changed over the last few decades. I think it's still true that artists are usually one of the first experimenters in playing with new technologies, usually by creating artifacts for the value of culture shock, and which eventually normalizes certain expectations and innovation. For example, Arduinos were created for artists to have access to creating interactive electronics-based works, but before that it was extremely difficult to make an LED blink if you didn't have enough of a background in electronics. And now it has become an expectation that an artist has had to have worked with an Arduino in their development, and it's even being introduced in elementary schools. When talking about culture shock and radical art practices, especially where biology lies, I think it's important to remember to talk about artist and cultural researcher Steve Kurtz, whose reputation was put on the line due to a suspicion of bioterrorism in 2004, when in fact he was working with non-pathogenic organisms to create cultural research objects critiquing ecology and biotechnology. Now you see organism-based works coming from artists and designers that are inspiring new industries, making positive waves on social media. There's so much potential between the arts community that I can't wait for the Arduino versions of lab tools to take over the art world and inspire unusual explorations.
What would you say falls within the intersection of synthetic biology and art?
For me, art is such a broad term. I mean, there's fine art, which I think Ananda mostly evolved with, and fine art focuses more on self-expression and evoking certain thoughts and emotions. And there's more quote-unquote practical art for me that is design or producing a illustration. So the field, my field, the field of medical illustration definitely falls within the intersection of the more practical art and synthetic biology. So synthetic biology is very productive. It's a very productive and rewarding branch of science where new discoveries are made daily. And in turn, the details of these newly generated knowledge somehow need to be communicated not only correctly, but effectively. So for a biochemist, for example, it's one thing to establish a methodology for finding the structure or function of a molecule, but it's another thing to be able to paint these structures into the context of a cell or to tell a story of a cellular event. And I think that's where medical illustrators come in, to basically fill in the gap between the people who knows the science and the people who need to understand it. So one thing I really love about molecular biology and synthetic biology is, unlike gross anatomy, synthetic biology requires us to make visuals for things that are too small to see, which means that the medical artists need to first do a lot of research and second, make a lot of educated guesses. So for example, what does the molecule look like? How do they move? How do they interact with each other? Sometimes it's very superficial or conventional things. So the light source must come from the upper left-hand corner at a 45-degree angle. Or sometimes it's about nitpicking things. Okay, so DNA is a left-handed helix, not a right-handed helix. So make sure when you're modeling that, the DNA is turning the right way. But there are other deeper aspects a medical artist need to consider in order to tell a molecular story better. So one example I can think of is when animating a ligand receptor binding. Instead of showing just one ligand, you need to show multiple copies of the same ligand with non-binding collisions, because in biochemistry, not every encounter between the same ligand or not every encounter between complementary molecules results in binding. Or for example, you want to simulate the behavior of a protein. Instead of modeling the protein as some sort of rigid material like a piece of plastic, you need to show that proteins have flexibility because proteins have adaptable functionality. To go one step further, I saw a quote you guys posted on Slack the other day, so everybody becomes an engineer when you don't have the right tools. So actually a huge part of medical illustration research focused on developing tools for illustrators, such as a plugin for a 3D visualization software, or an algorithm that helps to streamline the process of importing the molecular structure of a protein. It's very cool stuff, and it's definitely a very cutting edge field to be in.
Cool. This might sound a little strange, but I have to admit that I'm a pragmatist. But honestly, I think that the perfect intersection falls within the creation of open source DIY biology protocols and tools. For a while, I saw these amateur feats of engineering as just tools, but after getting to know some of the tool makers and the tool users of these communities, I soon came to realize that a lot of these collaborators came from all walks of life: digital fabricators, artists, designers, engineers, biologists. I ended up finding papers by a really fantastic scholar named Denise Akira, who has been following the collaboration between hackerspaces and synthetic biology. And they mentioned sort of a renaissance from the era of interdisciplinary collaboration in natural philosophy. From that era, a mix of disciplines created a lot of scientific instruments and works of art as scientific documentation, which has helped to record, document, and better observe the natural world.
Scientists and artists seem not to get involved with each other very much. Do you think there's any way to somehow combine their skills?
I think the keyword here is seem to be not involved each other very much.
because throughout history, art has always been there to help preserve and communicate scientific discoveries. So the earliest I can think of, like, we can trace back to not Aristotle, because no illustration of Aristotle's work actually got preserved, but we can go back to even the Islamic Golden Age, which is 8th to 12th centuries. So there are works such as Menstruals Anatomy that document processes such as pregnancy. And there's Ibn al-Haytham, I'm totally butchering names by the way, who's considered the father of modern optics. So he actually used illustration to propose that vision is made possible by the refraction of light rays. So that's centuries before Newton. And in medieval Europe, you have characters such as Andreas Vesalius, who conducted his own dissection of human bodies and basically revolutionized the teaching and study of anatomy. And also there is, this is a quote I actually found from a data visualizer that I have huge respect for. And in his book, the name of the person is Roberto Cairo, by the way. And in his wonderful book, The Functional Art, he talks about first and second level encoding. And here's me paraphrasing his infographic. So what he says is, basically, reality is unconstructed information. So scientists gather and filter these unconstructed information into data. And artists can then turn these data into structured information and present them to the audience. And the audience decode what is presented using memories and experiences, turning these structured data into knowledge. And finally, through a more in-depth understanding and sometimes memorization, we can finally have wisdom. So you can see that artists and designers, they are second level encoders, basically. They help to create experiences and memories and just turn data into structured information. So I actually think at the end of the day, scientists and artists, they both bear the responsibility of being educators, and we're actually more similar than we're different.
Oh, that's pretty enlightening.
I think there's a lot of collaboration happening already, but you have to go look for it. There are a great network of communities to check out on the internet. One of them is Hackteria. It has been a great resource to find projects for tool making that lie within the intersections of hacker culture, arts, biology, and technology. If you're talking about having these collaborations happening more in a public-facing fashion, things like iGEM and the Biodesign Challenge give young artists and scientists a really wonderful opportunity to explore their potential without an institutional or academic agenda hanging over them, but it usually comes at a hefty cost. As long as anyone in any field stays curious, there will always be opportunities for cross-pollination in the practices of arts and sciences.
Nice.
Smart.
Wow. These are insightful answers.
That concludes our fourth segment of our 5-episode-long podcast, Conversations. And don't forget to check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and at igemtoronto.ca. We'll see you next time with our last episode on the business and industry side of synthetic biology.